Hall Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen.
We break down all the early moves in free agency, including Mario Williams to the Bills, the Buccaneers' spending spree, and the white-hot receiver and cornerback market.
Big trades as well. It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining us for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. I am Hub Arkush, the publisher and editor, and my co-host this week and next is our senior editor, Eric Edholm. Wayne Larrabee, our normal host, does a lot of work for Westwood One on the NC2A basketball tournament, but Wayne will be back with us in a couple weeks. Right now, we're going to welcome in associate editor Kevin Fishbane. And, Kevin, certainly the biggest story of free agency to date is the new highest-paid defensive player in the history of the game. Mario Williams is a Buffalo Bill. Got a little iffy there for the Bills over the first 48 hours, but they got the deal done. Tell us what you know.
Yeah, fans were just at the edge of their seats. He stayed there for 3 days, and you heard plenty of jokes about Buffalo. And, you know, he brought his fiance in, toured the community. And Buffalo kept him there. I was wondering if they were using Marcell Dareus and Kyle Williams to, you know, block the door to keep him from leaving. But Buddy Nix said at the beginning they were going to be aggressive in free agency. He said that on the morning that free agency began, and him and Dave Wannstedt flew right to North Carolina right when it began, picked up Mario Williams. He was their target, and it shows you that the Bills believe, you know, that they are a Mario Williams away from really being a contender, going out and making him the highest paid defensive player in NFL history, something very anti-Buffalo Bills organization, the way it's been under Ralph Wilson. They never do things like this, showing a real commitment to the fans that they're going to make this move for a guy, not just the money and not just bringing in a player like that, but filling the biggest need they've had in a couple of years, which is the pass rush.
Well, and we know that Dave wants that prefers a 4-3 or at least a hybrid 4-3, and so they're probably going to put Mario Williams back where he was most successful with the Houston Texans. I guess the next big question, though, Kevin, is this is a team that was a lot more than one defensive player away from competing.
Yeah, right. They still have plenty of needs to fill in that back end. They need another cornerback on offense. They need another playmaker, wide receiver. And they have to hope that Ryan Fitzpatrick does not have a midseason, you know, going off and not playing well like he did last year. So, and this team is still in the AFC East with the Patriots, and the Jets and the Dolphins who are looking to improve. So, you know, this does not make them a playoff team, but this definitely shows that they're going the right direction. And it's possible the Bills said to Mario Williams, look, we're bringing you in here for this kind of money and we're not done. We're going to go get somebody else. Maybe, you know, they did talk to Robert Meacham. They were interested in Mario Manningham as well. Maybe they're going to go get another free agent wide receiver. They got the 10th pick in the draft, so they can get a contributor there. So they also probably promised him, we're going to do other things to make us a contender.
Well, Buddy Nix may have been aggressive in free agency, but he certainly slow played things a little bit. A 3-day visit for Mario Williams, that's maybe the longest in NFL history. Now, a deal the Jets didn't have to go far for him, actually one that happened before free agency. The re-signing of Mark Sanchez has now been swept under the rug a little bit, but I do want to talk about it, Kevin, because it is significant. They made a commitment to him. You know, whether he earns every dollar that he's gotten on that contract, it remains to be seen. But can you break down what the commitment is for Mark Sanchez, what the dollars mean, and where do you think the Jets go from here with him?
Yeah, what it really does, Eric, is it gives you the, you know, the confidence that Mark Sanchez is going to be their quarterback at least through 2013. The $40.5 million number that was floated around is what it is overall, but he's getting the same base salary for 2012, a couple million more in 2013, and the Jets are able to get out of it if they decide to move on and part ways after 2013 without having to pay him a lot of extra money. So that's kind of the little thing that you didn't hear a lot about when it first came out. So the Jets are really, you know, it kind of reeked a bit of a financial apology because the Jets were going after Peyton Manning. They did look into that. They decided not to. And we've heard about the Jets coddling Mark Sanchez before, so this could be another idea of them coddling him, showing the confidence he is their starting quarterback. And who knows, he could be better in a Tony Sperano offense if they, you know, but now with Mario Williams in division, they're really going to need to go address right tackle.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. We're going to hand the mic off now to Associate Editor Arthur Arkush. Arthur's beat is the AFC South. We can't really talk much about the Titans or Peyton Manning as we tape. He has completed his visit with the Titans. He is now considering the four teams he's talked to and maybe even considering, you know, visiting with another team or two. However, his old team, the Indianapolis Colts, kind of shocked everybody when they got a deal done with Reggie Wayne.
Yeah, they did. And what we're hearing, by all accounts, is that this really was just a brilliant move by the Colts. You know, they're obviously blowing things up and starting fresh, but they have now found a way to keep one, you know, stalwart on each side of the ball when you're talking about Robert Mathis and Reggie Wayne in the mix. I think the real beauty of this deal might be when you put it side by side with what his old teammate Pierre Garçon just got in Washington. You could look at what Laurent Robinson got in Jacksonville. The Colts got a pretty good deal with Reggie Wayne. They gave him $17 million, only seven guaranteed for a perennial Pro Bowler. So it looks like a really good move, not only on the field, gives Andrew Luck, obviously his go-to guy, a guy who he can count on, but, you know, it gives Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano a steadying force in that locker room, a guy who can, you know, show the young guys how it's done.
And that's why I think this is one of the most underrated moves so far in free agency, Arthur and Hub. I just look at it and I say, yeah, they're rebuilding, but you need somebody to help transition things. And it was a fantastic swing.
All right, Arthur, we're going to ask you to hold on for just a second. We've got to take a quick commercial break here. We're going to wrap up the AFC South. And Mike Welkening brings us up to speed on the AFC North in just a moment or two. Welcome back, everybody. You've got Pro Football Weekly on your radio dial. Maybe you're listening at the Talk Zone or on the Internet, so we appreciate you all tuning in with us. And we were visiting with Associate Editor Arthur Arkush talking about the AFC South. And, Arthur, the Houston Texans needed to do something to help their salary cap situation. I don't think anybody saw him releasing Eric Winston. He's their starting right tackle. He's been a fixture on that offensive line. He's a good but not great football player, very consistent. And this one caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, it sure did. Winston's been a very, very consistent performer for Houston for several years now. Really has been one of the better right tackles in the league and, you know, a great run blocker, a super durable guy. And as you mentioned, I think it caught most people off guard when the Texans did release him earlier this week. Now he had about a $4.5 million cap hit for this year. So they were able to save a little bit of money there. And what this says is that they clearly value center Chris Myers more than Eric Winston. That's a guy who has jumped up to the top of the list in terms of their unrestricted free agents they're hoping to re-sign.
Guys, something to stick in the back of your mind. We saw a lot of this in 2006. Eric Winston, I don't know that he was on the executive committee, but a very vocal and active member of the players' negotiating committee throughout the lockout. Suddenly he's out of work. There was a lot of trouble over this with some of those players 5 years ago, and you just have to scratch your head. It doesn't seem like a Bob McNair move, but you can't ignore the coincidence there either. Real quickly, Arthur, before we move on to Wilkie, the Jaguars, I love what they've done. I think they overpaid for Laurent Robinson, but keeping Jerome Mincy and Lowry and signing Chad Henne to push Blaine Gabbert, I think the Jags have had as good a free agency period so far as anybody.
Yeah, I think they've done really nice, too, as you mentioned. I think they did overpay Robinson, but I'll tell you what, the wide receiver market dictated that. They were going off the board quickly, so the Jaguars had to not only move fast, but they were going to have to overpay to solidify that unit. Now, they need more help, there's no question, but that's a guy with some serious potential, obviously had a career year last year. When you talk about Jeremy Mincy, Dwight Lowry, they were guys they absolutely had to re-sign. They weren't going to find better replacements out on the open market. And when you talk about Chad Henne, 26-year-old kid with a rocket arm who's going to come in and certainly be able to push Gabbert, so it sounds like a win-win. If Gabbert improves because of it, great. If not, they've got another young kid who they can develop and, you know, who's got some real potential.
Thank you for that information, Arthur. One quick note on Laurent Robinson. 5 years worth of production is about what Wes Welker did last year on the field, so it begs the question, what the heck is he worth? You know, that's something the Patriots are going to have to deal with, but we'll talk about the AFC East in a little bit. We bring in senior editor Mike Welkening, and Mike, you know, the Baltimore Ravens, I think everybody kind of knew, and I was talking to Cam Cameron this week when I was in Baltimore for the Ed Block Courage Awards, and you know, I think everybody kind of realized around the team they'd have to suffer some losses. They have so far. Corey Redding, longtime defensive end. Jarrett Johnson signed with the Chargers. And Ben Grubbs, their talented left guard, also goes to the Saints. So that's three starters they lose. We know they have to take care of Joe Flacco. Ray Rice has been franchised. They need a new deal for him. Just talk about where they stand now. Can they sustain the depth hits they've taken? And are there any other outside moves in them for free agency?
I think that the in-house moves are sort of at the top of the list at this point. They very obviously want to take care of Joe Flacco. Getting Ray Rice done to lower that cap number, I think, is important. They've also got Lardarius Webb, who's coming up next year, too. And in an ideal world, they would extend him and keep him in the fold. He played very well last year. So this is something they've had to face before, where they've lost starters to other teams. They have run the 3-4 very well for a long time. And Corey Redding was a guy that they signed and brought in for a couple of years as a value signing. He performed very well for them. Now he moves on. You know, they've got guys like, you know, on the defensive line like Pernell McPhee, Arthur Jones that can come in, I think, and do a nice job. Losing Jarrett Johnson hurts in terms of the run defense. But, you know, all things considered, they're pretty deep there as well. Paul Kruger probably steps into a bigger role. Grubbs, it was always going to be difficult from a money perspective to kind of get him done. So they need help at that guard position. They've always been good, guys, at getting free agents that have come in to sort of be value guys. Again, I mentioned Redding. They've also been good in the trade market over the years, too, where they have found guys during the summer or signed guys during the summer who've come in and been effective for them. And so I don't think Ozzie Newsome is done by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, this is life in the salary cap era where you're going to lose some guys and they've got to extend some guys to keep that core together.
Mike, it's something about the Cincinnati Bengals that seems even when they win, they find a way to lose. I mean, there are a few teams in the NFL with as much cap space as they have. Serious needs on the defensive line in terms of pass rush, certainly at wide receiver, at running back. Now, this is the last year. The first 2 years of this deal were different than the last eight, where they're going to be able to maybe keep a little bit of their cap money if they want. But could that really be Mike Brown's plan? Because they haven't done a damn thing so far.
I think it was surprising to see them lose both Frosty Rucker and Jonathan Finney early in free agency, but these are two guys that were productive last year, had very good years. They're both rugged defensive ends, you know, appeal to other teams, and they got paid probably at the top of their capabilities, probably more than the Bengals wanted to pay from a accounting standpoint. It probably might have been the right move fiscally, but you lose one of the things that really kind of distinguished this defense last year is that they were deep in the front four. Now that's not the case. They're going to have to draft well. They're going to have to keep adding there. And this is a team, guys, that has some needs at running back. I think they need a second receiver. I think the offensive line is something that they'd like to shore up, and certainly cornerback is a position that they're going to need to shore up at some point. So, yeah, I mean, for a team that made the playoffs last year, they're a team that probably has to go shopping to fill some needs.
All right, Mike, I'm going to ask you to hang on for just a second. We want to touch base quickly on the Browns and the Steelers. But first, we take a very quick commercial break. We'll get Wilkie and Eli Cabron coming up next. Hub Arkish and Eric Edholm here, bringing you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. We were visiting with senior editor Mike Wilkening. We want to quickly wrap up the AFC North before we move on. And Mike, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Cleveland Browns, you know the Steelers aren't going to do anything in terms of dramatic signings. They appear to have accomplished their purpose in putting the high tender offer on Mike Wallace. They will find a way to match it if they have to, so probably not much news there. Cleveland, some under-the-radar stuff, kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they signed Frosty Rucker, you know, to be one of their starters defensive end. They re-sign Dimitri Patterson, who, you know, was very good as the third corner last year. Maybe he moves into a bigger role. Even if he's still the third guy, you guys know this is a passing league at this point. You need as many good corners as you can. But they lose Peyton Hillis. And see, running back clearly is a need for them. That was a relationship, I think, that was stressed quite a bit last year, to say the least, because of everything that went on. So it's probably not entirely surprising that he moved on. But this is a team that, when you look at that offense, you know, they need help at every skill position. We've said this time and again. So let's see if they do anything as this market cools down or how they proceed in the draft where they have two first-round picks.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike, for your work on the AFC North. We now take it out west, the AFC West, and associate editor Eli Cabron. Eli, let's start with the San Diego Chargers. To me, I don't know. I really did support the bringing back of head coach North Turner and GM A.J. Smith, but you got to explain some of these moves to me. They let Vincent Jackson go. I think that was kind of a foregone conclusion. Now, they've re-signed two of their targets on the offensive line, but they still have gotten weaker, losing Marcus McNeil. And they replace Jackson with Robert Meacham, and a guy who I think was a good system player in New Orleans. But to me, just isn't a number one type of wide receiver. Is that the way they envision him out there?
I don't know, Eric, if they think he's going to be the number one wide receiver, but I think that they feel that with the production that Meacham can add, and then hopefully having Malcolm Floyd for a full season, he was banged up last year, hopefully having Antonio Gates healthy, that this offense will be able to sustain what they did in years past. But the issue is going to be on the offensive line. You mentioned that they re-signed a couple of their guys, Nick Hardwick and Jared Gaither, but they still need improvements there. And they could still add another target for Phillip Rivers, because Meacham is not going to be able to fill the void completely of what Vincent Jackson brought to the table.
You know, Eli, it's interesting, though, and I've been looking at this Vincent Jackson Tampa signing, and I know you know this, but our listeners may not realize, this is a guy who never caught 70 passes in a single season. You know, when we talk about Robert Meacham being a number one target, I'm not so sure Vincent Jackson ever was. I mean, he's just a big, exciting guy who's made some big plays.
Yeah, Vincent Jackson disappeared a lot in games last year, and that was a concern of the Chargers. His work ethic was questioned a lot. He had six games with two or fewer receptions. But the thing about Jackson was he averaged almost 18 yards a catch. So when he did show up, he made big plays. And I think that that's what they kind of want out of Meacham. He's fast. He's tall. That is similar in the Vincent Jackson mold. If he can get down the field and Phillip Rivers can get him the ball, I think that, it's a match that he doesn't really have to be an elite player, but he just has to provide that deep threat that they need.
Eli, the Broncos, I think, have too many eggs in one basket. If they get Peyton Manning, they're better at quarterback. I'm still not sure that they're a contending team. And if they don't get him, the market is drying up everywhere where they might want to improve themselves. And I don't know what Manning does to their cap situation if they do get him.
Yeah, they're remaining very quiet. I think John Elway and John Fox are just really hoping that Peyton Manning gets there, because that, obviously, we've talked about this before, they are not comfortable with Tim Tebow. They would love to move on to someone like Peyton Manning, but if he signs elsewhere, which at this point nobody really knows what direction he's headed, they've kind of missed out. They're looking at defensive line help. That's not really apparent anymore. Their rushing game, they need help at running back, and especially if Tebow's not going to be in the offense. A lot of people like to criticize Tim Tebow, but he helped their running game a lot. Willis McGahee's 30 years old. If Peyton Manning's under center and Willis McGahee's your starting running back, that's going to be an issue in the running game. So they need help there. The Broncos have been really quiet, and I think it might be hurting them if Peyton Manning especially doesn't go there.
Hey, Eli, very quickly, not much to talk about the Raiders. They got all kinds of salary cap problems. They'd love to keep Michael Bush if they can. He's visiting the Bears and the Bengals. The Chiefs not real active either, but the signing of Peyton Hillis, I think, is fascinating. I mean, it reunites him with Dable and Romeo Crennel. It makes him a 1-2 punch again with Jamal Charles. If everybody's healthy there, that could be a big deal for them.
I thought that was a fantastic signing. I agree, Hub. I think him and Jamal Charles, especially if both of them are healthy, could be a dynamic combination, because Charles obviously is an explosive threat, and Hillis is more of the power back, but they can both catch the ball. They can both block a little bit. That allows the offense to kind of have some flexibility. A lot of people were wondering what the Chiefs were doing, if they were waiting for Peyton Manning also, but Scott Pioli has come out and addressed a need there. They're in the hunt for Eric Winston, the right tackle. That would shore up their offensive line a lot. So the Chiefs are making some under-the-radar moves, and I think that they're going in the right direction.
All right, Eli, thank you much. Let's start quickly now, Eric, with a couple of your teams, and we'll pick up the rest in the next segment. Could you explain to everybody the myth of the DeSean Jackson contract? I'm sure he's happy that he can say he got his long-term deal, but what he got is really not that different from what he had.
Yeah, and this thing came together pretty quickly, Hub. And so, you got to remember who his agent is. It's Drew Rosenhaus. And a lot of Drew's contracts have these big flashy number, $51 million, 5 years. He can show that to prospective clients and say, look what I got for DeSean Jackson. I'll bet you half that total, which I'll never see in my life, that DeSean Jackson doesn't collect that entire total. Basically, it boils down to a two-year deal, and really, in essence, a one-year deal. He's going to get $11 million guaranteed this year, another four after this season. So really, the hit is not that big, and they can spread out the cap hit over those 5 years. If DeSean goes back to his old ways of being petulant, of being selfish, of being a me-first guy, they can cut him, but they need that deep threat. And there wasn't a guy in this market, I think, that they were willing to pay for that had the same kind of skills that Jackson did.
And not that they're thinking this way, but he's even more tradable now with that contract.
Yep.
And so they've really put themselves in a good position. Not much happening with the Giants. They did sign Martellus Bennett. We'll check with Eric on the Cowboys and the Redskins right after this quick commercial break. Yes, it is, and I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm, bringing it to you this week as our regular host Wayne Larrabee is out on assignment. Wayne will be out this weekend next, as Wayne calls quite a bit of the NCAA tournament for Westwood One. We were talking about the NFC East with Eric. It is his conference. We're going to bring Dan Parr in just a moment. But, Eric, a lot of people complimenting the Washington Redskins. I'm trying to figure out what they did. They badly overpaid for Pierre Garçon. Josh Morgan is a question mark at best, and I'm going to give him points for moving up and winning the RG3 Derby, but boy, they paid a really steep price.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an optimist and you want to put a positive spin on it, you say, okay, if you're going to get RG3, you've got to do better than you know, Leonard Hankerson, Santana Moss, Jabbar Gaffney, the guys they had last year. But all of a sudden, I mean, you start looking, and maybe there isn't a true number one, because look, Pierre Garçon has not been a number one receiver in his career. He's still inconsistent. I still think about that drop in the Super Bowl that may have cost the Colts another title. Inconsistencies in route running, hands, things like that. Is explosive. Do see him as a player on the rise, but the money there, $21 million guaranteed, compared to the other receiver deals that got done, including DeSean Jackson and Vincent Jackson, it just doesn't quite add up. Now, Josh Morgan's deal is essentially a two-year deal, and a lot of people did say, had this guy played in the NFC Championship game, the 49ers might have been in a Super Bowl. So that's the optimist's take. I don't want to be the pessimist the entire time. I think there are some things that they still have to do, obviously, on the offensive line and a few other places.
Yeah, the funny thing about that is I agree. I had heard that and thought that about the Niners, but then you get to the obvious question, then why didn't the Niners resign?
That's right, and they need receivers.
They're looking elsewhere. They're signing Randy Moss. Yep. So that's the part that bothers me a little bit about that. Now, the Dallas Cowboys, as I understood it, were right up against the cap prior to getting penalized $10 million by the league office just before free agency started. Nonetheless, they've gone out. They've signed Kyle Orton to back up Tony Romo for the next 3 years, and we assume to back up. We'll keep a close eye on that, as there's always Tony Romo excitement. And then they spend $10 million a year on Brandon Carr, who I think was the best cover corner available. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money at that position, Hub. And I think that the deal, the market was set when Cortland Finnegan went to St. Louis and got $10 million. And $100,000 more is what Carr got. And I think you're right. I think he is the best corner. He's younger. Hasn't missed a start in his entire career. Was a fifth-round pick. He started every game in his career. Tough physical press man corner. Fits exactly the style they want. But not a big interceptor. 8 interceptions over 4 seasons concerns you a little bit. This is not Deion Sanders. He doesn't shut down half the field. He doesn't make a lot of big plays. Now, the Orton deal is interesting. I actually got a chance to talk to Tony Romo when I was in Baltimore last week, and, you know, sort of anticipated the signing. He said, I'm all for it. He said, I like the experience backup. I had fun with John Kitna. I'm going to enjoy working with Kyle Orton. But you're right. He's missed time the last 2 seasons. I mean, Romo, there are questions about his durability.
All right, let's welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. And Dan, of course, has the NFC South as well as the Chicago Bears. And Dan, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers seem to be setting the market for everybody. They came out with a flourish. They've quieted down now, but nobody made more noise early.
Yeah, they went out and got Vincent Jackson, Carl Nix, Eric Wright. I mean, these are some of the top players that were available on the open market. Vincent Jackson, the best wide receiver available. Carl Nix, the best guard in the game, arguably. And Eric Wright, a guy that fills a need for them at corner, who's coming off a nice season with the Lions. So they spent a lot in guaranteed money on these guys over the next few years. We're talking close to $70 million to these three players. And if you look at the lifespan of the contract, if they get to the max value in it, it's going to be a much higher number. We're talking $140 million or so. And right now they are believed to have about $20 million or so in cap space remaining, but it looks like their big work is done. They'll be active still, but to a far less degree than they were in these first few days.
Dan, at the point at which we're taping, Drew Brees and the Saints remain at loggerheads. This is obviously a situation we're going to keep an eye on. You didn't think of Brees as the type of guy who would maybe hold out, but it certainly sounds like we're heading in that direction. If you believe the reports, Brees asking for $23 million per season the first 3 years of his deal. Saints coming in somewhere around the 18 range. That's a $15 million difference total in with my rudimentary mathematics. So the question is, has anything that happened on the market changed Brees' stance? Has anything emboldened him? Has it strengthened his position? And do you think it's going to get to a holdout? How acrimonious could these negotiations get?
Well, we'll have to see what the final terms shake out on some of these other big deals for the top guys available. We'll see what Peyton Manning gets. We'll see what some other guys get. That will affect the negotiations between Drew Brees and the Saints. There's no reason to think there's been any progress made there since they ended up placing the exclusive franchise tag on him. Does it get to the point where there's a holdout? I still would be a little surprised. You can't rule it out at this point at all. But I just have a feeling that when it comes time where they need Drew Brees to be on the field practicing with the offseason programs, that he'll be there. But this has gone on longer than a lot of people expected it to already, and there's no end in sight at this point.
All right, Dan, the Atlanta Falcons, not much to report there. They're playing chicken with John Abraham and Curtis Lofton, hoping to retain him. Don't know if they will. The Carolina Panthers did their heavy lifting last year, re-signing a lot of their own, did restructure Thomas Davis's contract. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Bears later, but let me just ask you very quickly. Let's stay away from Brandon Marshall for the moment. What about, you know, bringing in both Jason Campbell and re-signing Josh McCown? I thought Jason Campbell would get a chance to be a starter elsewhere.
And they paid pretty well, elite backup money for Jason Campbell, $3.5 million. This is a situation no one thought he'd be in. He thought he'd be looking to go be a starter somewhere. The Bears went through a absolute nightmare last season of not knowing what they had in their backup with Caleb Haney, thinking he was more ready for the job than he was. And it cost them a chance, you know, potentially to make the playoffs. And it may have cost Jerry Angelo, general manager, his job. Phil Emery is in now, and he seemed uninterested in making the same mistake. He was willing to pay for it to get Jason Campbell, a guy who has starting experience. You know what you're going to get in him to back up Jay Cutler. And Josh McCown is in the fold, too, as you mentioned, a guy who they had step in down the stretch last year. Instead of going to Nathan Enderle, their fifth-round pick, who also is still on the roster, maybe it'll come down to a competition between him and McCown to get that last spot on the quarterback depth chart.
All right, Dan, I've underestimated players before. If you think about it, you know, what's his name? Cutler's been pretty durable until now. Maybe $3.5 million a year to carry a clipboard for Jason Campbell isn't such bad work
if
you can get it. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We got lots more free agency updates coming in just a moment. You're listening to Pro Football Weekly. I'm Hub Arkish, along with my co-host, Eric Edholm, and we now welcome in our executive editor, Dan Arkish, my big brother, who covers the NFC West for us. And Dan, your division and your team is probably the most difficult for us to talk about right now, only because we tape late each week. And as we tape this program, Peyton Manning appears nowhere near a decision, so the Arizona Cardinals very much on hold. And the Seattle Seahawks never really got into the Manning Derby, but they're awaiting a visit from Matt Flynn. We can report that the Seahawks have surprisingly cut Robert Gallery and, I guess, not surprisingly let John Carlson, their tight end, get away after they signed Zach Miller for big money last year, but Miller never paid off.
No, but I think he's going to have a better chance this year, Hub. I'm amazed at the money that Minnesota spent on Carlson. I mean, he did have some good numbers before, but he's had some health problems. But, you know, with Miller already there, it's not too surprising that he's gone. Gallery is much more of a surprise.
We talked about the Rams, you know, a segment ago. We mentioned Brandon Carr and the money he got in Dallas. Very similar terms for Cortland Finnegan, reuniting with Jeff Fisher, the head coach there. They played together in Tennessee. You know, Finnegan's 28 years old. He's a feisty corner. What do they see? I mean, they obviously think he's a lockdown playmaker, but that is some big money for a cornerback that late in his career.
Well, you're right, Eric. It really is a lot of money, but they really like him. He was their biggest free agent target, regardless of position. And when they, you know, dumped all these veterans on Monday and picked up about $20 million in salary cap, they were able to make a play for Finnegan. Did they overpay? I don't know. I mean, one real thing about him that I think is interesting and important is that he plays with this big physical edge. And in the wake of Bountygate, people are wondering just how hard this defense and how aggressive it's going to be. I think this sends a message that they're going to be just as edgy as ever because Finnegan is a pretty feisty guy.
And also feisty, Greg Williams, the guy at the center of the Bountygate situation from New Orleans. Fisher says he's part of the normal operations there. But, Dan, let me ask you real quick on the offensive side of the ball. We just assumed they would go hard for a wide receiver. They would get help at that position. It seemed to be a need. Now there's talk about Danny Amendola maybe walking in restricted free agency. Do you think they have a plan there, or are they going to wait to the draft? What do your tea leaves say right now?
You know, Eric, I mean, wide receiver continues to be a lingering problem for the Rams. The market and free agency just dried up real quickly, and, you know, their plan this offseason was to add a veteran starter and a rookie starter. It looks like that could be a problem, you know, as far as the veterans go. People like Mario Manningham are still there. I guess you'd probably consider him maybe the best of what's left there. As far as the rookie solving the problem, Justin Blackmon was a guy that they definitely would have figured for at that number two spot if they still have it. Now that they're down to the number six spot, he may be gone, but they are in a position to possibly move back up in the draft. The new GM, Les Snead, even mentioned that possibility. So I think that they still really want to address that wide receiver situation. They really have to.
You know, Dan, speaking of wide receivers, I love what the San Francisco 49ers did there with Randy Moss. It seems like such a low-risk, high-reward type of move, but it still leaves them. That's not enough. I mean, you know, you got Josh Morgan's gone. Tejan Jr. Is a free agent. Michael Crabtree's been a disappointment. Other than that, I assume they're going to get Alex Smith done. We think that's a safe assumption, and I love the re-signing of Carlos Rogers. I think that was a great move.
Well, Hub, let's start with the defense and the re-signing of Rodgers. You know, now with him signed, they have all the starters back from that defense that was so good last year. And not only that, 9 of the 11 starters are signed through 2013. So, you know, you're talking about real stability there on that side of the ball. As far as the offense goes, yes, it still really does appear like Alex Smith is going to re-sign, although it's taking a lot longer than anybody expected. And they are, you know, hoping for big things from Randy Moss, hoping that he can do what Braylon Edwards was unable to do. It's kind of interesting that Jim Harbaugh threw to Randy Moss for a workout and apparently liked what he saw. So it's going to be very interesting to see if Randy can reinvent himself one more time.
Yeah, we have to assume that Jimmy wasn't covering himself in case he can't get Alex Smith re-signed. Typical Harbaugh. Dan, thank you very much. We're going to take one more quick commercial break. We've still got a few stragglers left over that NFC North to talk about in just a moment. Welcome back, everybody. We have taken you around the NFL, visited with the entire Pro Football Weekly editorial staff, getting you up to speed on where free agency is at, the winners and losers so far. I'm Hub Arkish, along with senior editor Eric Edholm. And Eric, just a couple teams left to touch on, the NFC North. Let's go back. We talked a little bit with Dan Parr, who covers the Bears, about the signing of Jason Campbell and Josh McCown. They also signed Brian Costanzo and Eric Weems. A lot of people don't even know who these guys are. You know, they're complimentary parts. Obviously, Gamble, a nice addition. But what the Bears did was try to address their greatest need at wide receiver via trade as opposed to free agency and made a deal with the Miami Dolphins for Brandon Marshall. Now, depending on who you talk to, well, no matter who you talk to, it's a fascinating deal, but depending on who you talk to, it's hard to say if there's a winner or a loser here. Marshall, it turns out, 2 days before the trade, was involved in an incident in a New York nightclub where he allegedly, and the word the New York Post used was cold-cocked a young woman. Now, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. We don't have the facts there, but this is a guy with a long track record. And we now know, we've known all along, but now we add to the fact that all these things have gone on in the past, the periods of domestic abuse. Is there a winner here? Did the Bears accomplish? Because on the field, he's better than any free agent wide receiver that was available.
I think you're right about that, and I think the Bears, I'm not sure they knew the story before they made this trade. Now, the word out of Chicago and the word out of the Hallis Hall is that they knew part of the story. They were sort of aware of the allegations, that thing. I doubt that. I really do. And then maybe that's just me. But, you know, there's a reason why the Dolphins traded him for 2 third-round picks after acquiring for 2 second-round picks. So the price has dropped, even though he had a fantastic season last year. Now, if Jay Cutler can get him in line, and we know their history. They played together in Denver. They were buddies out there. You know, each had their best season when they were playing with each other. If Jay can get him serious, and I think he's taken on more of a leadership role in this past year, maybe it's great. You know, maybe he's the guy that can get Brandon in line. He is a great wide receiver at age 28.
I guess the question that everybody has to handle for themselves, or really two questions, is will he outweigh with production on the field whatever negatives he brings off the field? We just got to wait and see on that one. And number two, if in fact this was just a brilliant move by the Bears, where was everybody else?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I believe there's only 3 receivers in the NFL with 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons right now. Brandon Marshall is one of them. They only gave up 2 number threes, all kinds of teams desperate the position. The Miami Dolphins have been trying to deal Brandon Marshall for a year now because
right.
of his off-the-field issues. So just so it's a fascinating story behind the scenes, and we're going to have to wait and see. And then there's the last piece of it, which is even if he is guilty of nothing worse than being in the wrong place at the wrong time, he's going to be suspended again. He's already in the program, and we don't know how serious his suspension could be, depending on how innocent or guilty he turns out to be of this latest charge. Again, New York nightclub last Sunday morning, actually Monday morning at 4 a.m. Detroit Lions made huge news. They signed the biggest wide receiver contract in the history of the game with Calvin Johnson, probably the best wideout, probably deserves the biggest deal. Does anybody deserve one that big?
Yeah, and there are no questions about Johnson's character. He's been a model citizen since coming to Detroit. You know, he badly, badly wanted to win and help them win a division, or, you know, get into the playoffs this year, I should say. And I think they feel like the arrow is definitely pointing out upward. had he hit the market next year, you never know. I mean, you never know what the cap number was going to be. You never know what a desperate team for a playmaker of his stature would be willing to pay. So they went ahead and paid him, and $60 million guaranteed. You know, I hesitate to say that any player is worth that much, especially one who may only catch, let's say, four or five passes in a game. That's what, you know, defense is committed to take him away. That's what he may end up averaging. So, still a fantastic, terrific player who makes Matthew Stafford better.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Eric. The Lions are saying that he also saved them $9 million against the cap this year because he had an extensive contract. Would have been a $22 million hit. They've got that down to 13. But here's the piece of it. Tom Brady and Peyton Manning in their last contracts didn't get $60 million guaranteed.
No.
They're quarterbacks. I mean, you know, it's a huge, huge number. When you look at what Vincent Jackson just got, and we're all kind of talking about it, $25 million guaranteed. They had to more than double that?
It's not even the same ballpark,
It leaves you scratching your head again. Not much to say about the Vikings and the Packers. The Vikings do sign John Carlson. Packers playing a dangerous game of chicken at the center position.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Scott Wells obviously very productive in their system. It sounds like he's being allowed to visit other teams pretty freely. And, you know, they might covet Chris Myers, the center from the Texans, but there's been no movement there. We know the Packers slow play like the best of them. They wait for all the chips to fall. They haven't made a move on Jarrett Bush or any of their other free agents yet. So it sounds like they're letting the market settle, and they'll pounce at some other point to fill that center spot.
The Vikings and Rick Spielman have made it pretty clear they're rebuilding. There's not going to be a whole lot going on in free agency. We've got one more commercial break for you. Then we are back with the Publisher's Pen.
And now for the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Eric, there was actually a huge story that broke the day before free agency, and because it's a little complicated in nature and there's a lot of numbers involved, it's somehow difficult to tell, but I think it's worthy of our time. Roger Goodell and the NFL League Office penalized the Washington Redskins and the Dallas Cowboys for basically cheating the salary cap in 2010, the uncapped year. And what a number of teams did was take a bunch of contracts that were supposed to be paid out in subsequent years and front-load that money to take advantage of not having a cap in 2010. In Goodell and the league office's opinion, the Cowboys and the Redskins went too far, that they literally cheated it. They cheated the other teams. And so what they've done is they have penalized the Washington Redskins $36 million of cap space this year and the Dallas Cowboys $10 million. Now, they negotiated, said they would split it over the next 2 years, but what that still means is the Redskins have $18 million this year and next year, less under the cap, and the Cowboys have $5 million, and each of the other 30 teams gets an extra $1.6 million in cap space because the cap still has to hit the same number. It is notable that Roger Goodell has gone after two of his stronger owners. Maybe it's the comfort of a 10-year CBA and not worrying about the future, but this is a significant penalty for these two teams. They will appeal it, but it looks like they're going to lose. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to Randy Meyer, the best engineer and producer in the business. Syndication Networks is our home studio. And most of all, guys, we want to thank all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. We hope you'll join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.